It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Jim Williams is with us today. He was with Keeneland for 38 years, 1971 to 2009, the original title Director of Publicity. That evolved into Director of Communications, and as you might imagine, a lot of responsibilities under that title and a big part of the chapter of Keeneland's history. And Jim, it's good to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's nice of you to have me.
Well, this is we're recording on the weekend after the Bluegrass Stakes, and that was always a big item on the Keeneland calendar, and I'm sure that you can relate to what everybody at Keeneland was going through this past weekend preparing for the big event.
It was indeed, and you know, the Bluegrass, like a lot of things, has evolved over the years, and it was run last Saturday, which now is a month before the Derby. Mm-hmm. When I joined Keeneland in 1971, it was literally 9 days before the Derby. And at that time, almost every horse that ran well in the Bluegrass went on to the Derby, and many of them won. And so it quite a difference. It was a busy time, mm-hmm. and a lot of outstanding horsemen and horses competed in the Bluegrass through the years.
We mentioned that your start date at Keeneland was back in 1971. So give me a little lead up to that. You were pretty young at that time, and to get that position, but you'd had some experience in racing and had been interested in racing for some time before that, right?
I was, and I got interested in racing in the mid-1960s, and worked at the Herald Leader. Actually covered the 1965 Derby for the Herald, Lucky Debonair, Bill Shoemaker. Mm-hmm. As I was going to college, I worked both at the Herald Leader, and then in the summertime, I went to Monmouth Park in New Jersey and worked on their publicity staff up there. And when Ted Bassett took over in the late 1960s, some of the people that were there decided that they would go on to other things, and the position opened, and I was fortunate enough to get that position and be there 38 years later.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned covering the Derby at age 18 in 1965, and of course things have evolved through the years, but the stars of the media, the big-time newspaper columnists, everyone, of course, would cover the Kentucky Derby, and many of them would be in town for the Bluegrass Stakes preceding the Derby. But as an 18-year-old, did you see some of the people that you had read and looked up to over the years?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't remember that much about it, except I think at that time Red Smith was one of the mm-hmm. preeminent columnists from New York, and he most certainly was there, and it was a lot different than it is now. Of course, Churchill has expanded and greatly expanded on the experience of the Derby, and it was a big race then, but nothing quite like what it is now with all the corporate participation and of course, the facility is greatly different than it was then as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you became publicity director at Keeneland, I noticed in reading some Keeneland history that fall they set a new one-day attendance record. I think it was in the fall, 16,000, which seems small now, but that was a big crowd to handle then. But what were your goals as the publicity director? What did they expect you? What were their priorities at that time? And what did they say? Here's what you need to be working on.
Well, like everything else, it was greatly different then. Racing was a monopoly. Mm-hmm. It didn't have competition from casinos and other forms of gambling. So for the most part, you were able to open the doors since you only raced 15, 16 days. There was great anticipation in the opening of the spring meeting and the fall meeting. And we did advertising and we did publicity, but there wasn't the competition for the dollar that there is now. So my goal then was to really stay out of the way and hopefully further the the good word about Keeneland that had been developed through the years.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you built on your tenure there at Keeneland, of course, you get to know some of the riders, as I mentioned, and of course, and some of the riders, R-I-D-E-R-S, as you worked with them. The personalities in racing, I mean, these are people who live that life. They're moving around from track to track, and they lead a little different lifestyle than most of us do, but I'm sure you met some great people over the years that have become good friends.
Yeah, I think that's part of the greatest memories of working there were the people that you dealt with through the years, the owners, the trainers. You know, you renewed your acquaintance every spring and fall. Many of them would be the only time that you would see them. The jockeys, the great jockeys, the Pat Days of the world, who was a delight to work with. Trainers like some of them, Joe Bolero, Chuck Worsler, who became a good friend, John Veach, who had Alidar, and then Bud Delp brought in Spectacular Bid. And then at one point, we had almost every major newspaper in the country that was covering the bluegrass, Washington, New York, L.A., Chicago. The regional papers, Dayton and Cincinnati, Nashville and Knoxville, back at the height of the newspaper business, and of course that's all greatly changed now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it has. The media coverage is different now with websites, and of course the newspapers aren't front and center as they once were. But the task at that time, you get the crush of credential requests, and everybody in PR deals with that kind of thing. But you have a lot of duties leading up to the meet, and then of course there are events year round that you're working on too. But tell me about the lead up to a meet. What is, if the April meet is going to open on April the 5th, and what's your March like?
Well, we actually started back early in the year, or even after the previous meeting, kind of evaluating what you did and what you did well and what you didn't do so well, and then the first of the year, the condition book would be published, or the stakes book would be published, and I had the good fortune of working with people, and we would spread out around the country in mid-February to talk to horsemen about participating in the spring meeting, specifically the Bluegrass and the Ashland, and that gave us a chance to meet with those people on their grounds. Then there was the preparation of the program and the advertising. We had advertising agencies that came up with the creative work, but it was our job to be the conduit between Keeneland with the information and the advertising agencies. And it was a very busy time. And then also the press releases that had to be written, the credentials that had to be issued, and the phone calls that had to be answered, and the interviews with the local television and sometimes regional television stations.
Mm-hmm. The Keeneland has a situation where they have a wonderful tradition. People appreciate that. But at the same time, there's always a push to modernize and more easily accommodate fans in terms of both their betting and their day at the races, their experience at the races. How did you see that evolve over your 38 years?
Well, I think it was a balancing act of trying to retain the best traditions of racing, but also merging in the innovation. And while we were considered somewhat, I won't say backwards in our way, but very traditional, not too eager to change, we did some very significant things along the line. I was thinking back yesterday, we were one of the first racetracks in the country that adopted the ABC betting system that we now have. If you went to Keeneland back in the 60s or the 50s, you went to a $2 window, you went to a $5 window, and then if you were fortunate enough to win, you went around to the back of the windows and you cashed your ticket at the $2 cashier. But all betting and cashing became, you went, it was one-stop shopping at any window. You could bet any amount of money. It wasn't limited to $2. You could bet $2,000 if you wanted to, and you went back to the same window and cashed. That was a major change in the business, and that occurred in the, I think, in the late 70s. And Ted Bassett learned about it, and he said, you know, let's move forward. It's going to have growing pains. We had a very strong mutual union at that time, and they weren't eager to adapt to it. But we moved forward with it, and that's become a standard today. And Keeneland was at the forefront of that, as it was some other things. We were the first racetrack in Kentucky to have a turf course. And then in later years, we tried the poly track, the synthetic track. So there were a lot of, while there was a lot of tradition, there was also a lot of innovation through the years.
You've mentioned the name of Ted Bassett a couple of times, and he certainly was a unique and distinguished individual in his leadership time at Keeneland, and still a prominent figure. And recently saw a documentary about his life on KET, and you were in a couple of photos there with him, and worked with him closely for many years. But how would you describe his leadership style and what he meant to Keeneland?
Well, he was a former Marine. He was educated at Yale, and the Marine would frequently come out in him and, you know, let's charge ahead.
That sounds like you've heard that more than once.
Oh, yeah, and there were a few fist pounding on the desk, but he was an amazing person to work for. He was very supportive of his staff. While you might be criticized, don't be criticized by somebody from outside. He backed his people and was a tremendous leader and, of course, extremely well respected in the business through not only the United States but throughout the world.
And throughout the world is a good phrase to use, too, because the Keeneland name is known throughout the world. And while every person in PR for a large organization occasionally has to prepare for a visit by a celebrity or a dignitary, you had, a couple of visits from Queen Elizabeth that you've prepared for. Tell me about your role in that and how that went from your standpoint.
Well, we did, and probably one of my high points while I was at Keeneland, and yes, when we invited the Queen, and I think we actually invited her for I can't remember the details, maybe for the 50th anniversary, but somehow it worked into her schedule that she came a year earlier. And but we weren't about to tell her that, no, you can't do that. We have to wait a year. Mm-hmm. So Bill Greeley, who was I don't know at that point whether he was general manager or president, and I were sent to Washington to go to I think it was the British Embassy. And then we learned how we were supposed to act around the Queen. Mm-hmm. And it was a very interesting day. Interestingly enough, the head of the Secret Service detail who was assigned to her, I had gone to high school with. But the day went well, it was a beautiful day, and it was, you know, quite a feather in Keeneland's cap to attract, you know, the Queen of England.
Yeah, she is in some of the video that was shown in that program about Ted Bassett. They're walking along, and while you don't want to make too much of a judgment just from a brief video clip, it seemed like they genuinely hit it off, that they had a connection there. And, of course, horses were a big part of her life, and so it was a genuine interest, I think. But it seemed like she truly enjoyed her visit.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And, in fact, he visited with her frequently after that time in England, and actually rode, I think, in the carriage one day at Royal Ascot. She course, greeted the jockeys before they mounted their horses. She was in the winner's circle, and it was kind of an interesting thing that I noticed, and I don't know if anybody else had noticed it, but she had a trophy made for the occasion, and it was I believe a silver, traditional silver trophy that had been made by Asprey's, which is, I guess, one of the leading jewelers in England. And of course, Keeneland, for all of its races, gives a gold julep cup. So she presented her trophy, and then she presented the gold julep cup, or vice versa. And I thought I saw her mouth. I like the other one better. So we maybe somewhat upstaged the queen with our gold trophy.
Mm. Now, did you get a chance to say hello, to be introduced to her personally?
No, I wasn't. I was busy upstairs, but much of the staff had met her in the sales pavilion. And then she walked out behind the sales pavilion and met with some of the stable personnel, which was really really nice.
Yeah, that is a nice touch, and sort of, again, indicates that this was a genuine interest for her and not just a ceremonial sort of visit. I mean, it was that, but I mean, she also had a genuine interest in the horses and the people around them.
Well, she was a very astute horsewoman, mm-hmm. and had a stable of horses, rode, and was very, very knowledgeable.
And, of course, while the queen would be the best known of those that visited Keeneland, and let me ask you before we leave the subject of the queen, but was there a second visit? Did she not make a couple of visits in the 80s?
She did make other visits. I'm not sure if she came. She came back to Central Kentucky, but I don't think she came back for a second time at Keeneland. I may stand to be corrected there.
But there are other prominent visitors from all over the world that would make an appearance at Keeneland, usually during sales time. So that kind of gets us into the sales side of the business. For most racing fans, they think of April and October, but the sales operation is a huge one at Keeneland, and I'm sure you were very much involved with that. Tell me about the preparations for a big sale, and including the distinguished visitors who might be coming to make a purchase.
Well, was huge, and a lot of manpower, a lot of man hours. Back when I first started, there was a sale in July, which was very, very much tension, because horses were selling for just astronomical amounts of money during a very short period of time. There was a sale in September, November, and then another sale in January. The January sale attracted people ultimately from throughout the world. Sheikh Mohammed and Sheikh Hamdan, a number of Middle Eastern buyers, Khalid Abdullah, and others. And of course the top trainers, not only from this country, but Europe and some from Australia.
Mm-hmm. You've met such a wide variety of people, and we've touched on this a little bit, but any particular stories or requests that maybe riders might have had, some of the national riders coming in, or anything that stands out where you really had to go the extra mile, or things maybe have fallen apart a little bit, or something unusual?
Well, I can't think of anything specific in that area, but there were a number of interesting people through the years. I remember Steve Garvey, who at that mm-hmm. time was a high-powered player for the Dodgers. Tim Conway was there one day. And then you may remember, the Bobby Riggs, the tennis player who was playing, who was it? That
he played Billie Jean King.
Billie Jean King. President Bush, the older Bush. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Taylor and George Hamilton were there one day, and so a lot of interesting people, particularly at the races, And then in latter years, we also, I've failed to mention, the Japanese became a very big force at the sales as well.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the great races that you've seen. I know that doing the job that you did, it wasn't like you got to see every single race or could be much of a fan on work days. But tell me about the ones that stand out in your mind as you help media people cover them.
Well, I think one of them that stands out, or a couple of them that do, of course, would be the Bluegrass and Spectacular Bid and Bud Delp and the jockey Ron Franklin came in here, and they were the heavy favorites for the Derby. There was a small field, and he won impressively. And then I think a very memorable occasion was when Alidar, the great Alidar, raced here in the Bluegrass, won the Bluegrass quite easily. John Veach is the trainer, but Admiral and Mrs. Markey were there. They were up in years at that time. Ted Bassett arranged for a Keeneland station wagon to go next door to the farm, pick them up, and brought them up against the rail in the clubhouse. And Jockey George Velasquez brought Alidar over to the rail prior to the race, where they could get a close-up view of the horse. And then he went on to his easy victory. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of great fillies that ran in the Spinster. The Spinster was, at the time, the richest weight for age race for fillies and mares, which was kind of unique when it was developed in the 50s. So consequently, almost every year attracted the best, not only three-year-old filly, but older filly for that race. And there were a long list of outstanding horses that won that. Susan's Girl, Passiana, Bayakoa. I know I'm forgetting a lot of other great mares that ran in it, but it was a long list. Mm-hmm. There is a long list.
We've talked a little bit about the jockeys, but there's such a unique group in that it's a combination of courage and daring and strategy and athleticism and strength that they have to combine on every race in order to be competitive and to win with any regularity. As you got to know these guys, what qualities stood out? Was there anything, a common thread that ran through?
Well, it's a very dangerous sport. There are amazing athletes who have to maintain their weight and their fitness. I've had some jockeys that will tell you that riding a mile is like running a mile. But the jockeys have evolved over the years. When I first went to Keeneland in the early 70s, many times they weren't people that you would want to put before a television camera or a microphone. They just weren't media savvy. But as time went on, they became more and more outgoing and displayed their personality. My gosh, we've seen a lot of great jockeys at Keeneland through the years and the Pat Days. And now you had just the other day, Irad Ortiz and Joel Rosario and Tyler Gaffione, and the program just full of the best jockeys in the country. And the reason is because we have among the best purses in the country. So You always follow the money.
Oh, yes. That's important. The atmosphere around Keeneland, some of us who are based here locally and go to Keeneland far more often than we might go to another track may not always appreciate that, but this is truly a beautiful place and one that deserves its worldwide fame, and you really have to go a long way to find anything that comes close, don't you?
I think people are surprised when they come to Keeneland. Of course, Churchill Downs gets all the notoriety with the Derby and so forth, but once people come to Keeneland and they experience it racing here, many of them come back year after year. And I think that's a tribute to not only the founders, but the management through the years. And there's been a great deal of effort to maintain the traditions. The architecture at Keeneland is special. The landscaping is special. The fact that, you attract so many young people in the college town. One day I was told that Mrs. Charlie Whittingham was in attendance, and her husband had been one of the great trainers in California, and so we decided we would take her down to the winner's circle and have her present a trophy. And I guess at that point she was probably up in her 80s or so forth, and as we were walking down making conversation, she says, "What a handsome crowd. How many handsome men are in the crowd?" And it was a typical spring day with all the college students out in their finery.
Yeah, and that's become a regular part of some of the big crowds at Keeneland as the college students. And, of course, you're attracting more young people, young fans. Every sport needs to do that, and Keeneland helps racing do that with some of the special events and now the tailgating opportunities, and you saw that evolve over the years. I mentioned early about the I guess the first year that you were in your position at Keeneland, that they broke a record with a crowd of 16,000, of which nowadays doesn't sound very big by Keeneland standards, but that's a pretty good sized crowd, and of course, but the fact that it's been broken many times since then indicates the continued growth and interest and to be able to accommodate bigger crowds.
It has, and in fact, I think one day they were pushing 40,000. Well, they have had more than 40,000 for the Breeders' Cup, right. I believe, since I left. And now they've decided to cap attendance at 20,000, or they sell that many seats. Yes, and the mutual handle has gone up. The sales, when I first got to Keeneland, I think I wrote in the newsletter that they had done $32 million the previous year. And at one point, while I was there, we did close to three-quarters of $1 billion in horse sales. So Keeneland has really grown in many, many aspects.
Mm-hmm. You retired in 2009 and said at the time that you would appreciate being a fan for a while. Have you been able to do that and enjoy that?
I have been a fan, and I was delighted to go to the Breeders' Cup last year and the first year that it was at Keeneland. And I was at Keeneland for the opening Friday and the Bluegrass Stakes, and I try to get down to Churchill Downs a few times during the year because I enjoy going to the racing there as well. And, I'm still very much a fan, but it's nice to have the pressures of the daily pressures in someone else's hands.
Yeah, when you see the broadcasters in their booth, and now there's so much more coverage with the TVGs of the world and additional sites covering the racing, just coverage in a different way. In some ways, the print coverage, of course, is not what it used to be, but still, you have a lot of media around, and you see others handling those responsibilities. But again, over your 38-year period, you saw Keeneland really in the national spotlight. I think a lot of times, especially leading up to Derby, but other times as well.
Oh, absolutely. And as I look back on the 38 years, you know, there are not too many people get to work for the best in the business. And Keeneland most certainly was the biggest dollar volume horse auction company in the world. And the racing was as good as it gets. And so really, Keeneland is a world leader in many respects.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have the race meets in April and October, and as we mentioned earlier, the sales calendar is a big part of Keeneland as well. So your job is year-round and then some, or that job, the director of communications, and you had advertising involved too, and it's a wide-ranging scope of activity that the director of communications is involved in.
It was. And then in addition to the racing and the sales, we had simulcasting come on board, where Keeneland for a long time was a year-round operation. But people would frequently ask, well, if you just race in April and October, what do you do the rest of the year? And believe me, we stayed busy the rest of the year, and the sales kept us as busy, and the preparation, the assembly of the sales catalog, and the record keeping, and so it was a fully year round a job and we didn't look for something to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked about the visit with the Queen, which has to be up there among the top moments for you, but is there a top moment or two that in the 38-year period that you can recall where it just was a very memorable day?
Well, I think that was the ultimate. There were actually a lot of race days, none of them that immediately come to mind. Other than the opportunity to see so many of the great horses run, there were also memorable, and there were some days that we couldn't see the backside because it was snowing so hard. In the spring of the year, we had a few freak days where the weather wasn't the greatest in the world, but that's what happens at Keeneland in the spring of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a chance for a lot of variety in the weather, especially in that springtime and especially early in the spring meet. Anything you can share about again, just the prominent people, the overall experience that stands out to you now as you look back, people you came in contact with?
Well, there's been, as we talked about earlier, a lot of change through the years in both the facilities. Keeneland has greatly expanded its facilities. Recently I read where they purchased, I think, Manchester Farm, which sits right behind there, and as land became available, Keeneland has purchased land to protect itself. When I first started, you saw very few women on the racetrack. Now you have women in so many roles, not to mention the fact that the president of Keeneland is a woman. There were greatly expanded facilities. Bill Greeley was instrumental in the development of the corporate boxes at Keeneland, one of the first racetracks to have corporate boxes back before it was really kind of fashionable in among the many sports facilities around the country. Of course, the racetrack changed, the turf course added, which really added a broader dimension to the racing. So many more outstanding horses were able to attract so many outstanding horses, and some really outstanding turf horses have run here through the years, and most notably during the Breeders' Cup, and Keeneland has been so important to the to the community. It's shared its success with the community. And I think conversely, the community has always embraced Keeneland and made it a stop when they have visitors in town. And so I look at Keeneland in a broader sense as being so important and so important to the community culturally, economically, bringing people in from throughout the world to purchase their horses here, and the money that they spend on the horses ultimately filters down into the community in many ways. So I rather than picking out any singular event, I just think that the development of Keeneland through the years into a real world leader is the most notable thing.
Mm-hmm. And final question, what from your standpoint, and I know you've been retired for a few years now, but from your standpoint, what do you see in the future for Keeneland? How do you see things developing as technology continues to change, all sorts of things that maybe that might affect the fan experience, but as well as the business itself, the sales, what do you see ahead for Keeneland?
Well, I think it's well positioned to continue to flourish. Purses here are just outstanding as a result of the legalization of the horse racing gambling.
Legalization.
And now you have sports betting. Lexington or Central Kentucky or Kentucky remains the center of the breeding industry. So you have just outstanding horses continue to come to the sales. Those horses are succeeding throughout the world. So have a young management team at Keeneland, and I can only see that Keeneland will continue to flourish.
Well, I certainly had a great era for the 38 years that you were there, and we enjoy having Keeneland, of course, as part of our community. It's a real source of pride for everyone, I think. And Jim, you had a great part in a very lengthy chapter of Keeneland's history, and congratulations on that, and thanks for doing this today.
Well, thank you for having me. I very much appreciate it.
You've been listening to the WUKY Sports Page with your host, Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced at the WUKY studios by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to the Sports Page through iTunes, Google Play, or at our website, wuky.org. Thank you.